All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Today on The Grave Talks, Holding On to Life, conversation with David Barrett. Investigations into the supernatural for almost 20 years. He's traveled to the United States and United Kingdom to investigate some of the most haunted locales in both countries. He's an expert in using a variety of ITC equipment in order to have conversations with the departed. He's author of 3 books, all of which focus on myths and legends around the world. On this episode of The Grave Talks, we'll find out about his encounters with the otherworldly.
Well, it first started, now, when I say it started, the first experience I had, I was 12 years old. And at that age, my mum and dad had broke up. So you can imagine there was a lot of emotion involved. And at this time... my house that I stay in was always owned by my family. There was no other family that had stayed there. And I was through in my living room and I was lying on the couch and I'd seen this, what I would class as a full spectrum, coming right through the wall, looked at me, turned round and went back through the wall. Now, she was fluorescent. She was like glowing. Now, at this point, I tried to scream to wake my mum up because it was probably about like 10 o'clock at night. I couldn't scream because I was that scared. And this thing stuck in my mind, you know, and I'd said to my mum, and my mum had been through photos, and it turned out, I pointed out, it was my mum's sister that had died like kind of years past, and, you know, that kind of like blew me away. Now, coming from a Catholic background, they don't like talking about the paranormal, or, it's all taboo. So it was left there. It wasn't until I was about 22, I'd piqued an interest and I'd went on my first like an investigation. And my dad had died in a house fire.
Oh, wow.
So I was at this haunted location. It was in Glasgow and we were doing the Ouija boards. My day job's I'm a scientist. So I was on the Ouija board, not expecting anything to happen. And all of a sudden, my dad started coming through, so I came off the board because I know like the board, you can like move the board without like knowing. So I came off the board and I was directing the questions to 4 strangers, did not know me, and it was still my dad coming through. So I asked like personal questions that only myself knew, no one else knew. I mean, the people that actually know the answer to this question, I could count in my hand, and it was giving me all these answers. I then got, how did you pass? And it said fire, like chest. And this absolutely blew me away, you know, because I was like, you can imagine, you know, what it was, such an emotional time. And that kick-started my paranormal journey. Now, that was going on about 20-odd years ago. Since then, you know, I built up my own team. Yeah, I've done, like, TV work. You know, I've wrote books. I've investigated all over the world, and I continue to this day. It's my passion. It's my hobby. It's my passion.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the situation where you communicated with your father through the Ouija board. Was this done at the location of the fire, or was this a different location where you conducted that Ouija board session?
It was a different location. It was a cathedral hotel in Glasgow. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most haunted locations in Glasgow. It was done in there.
So when this happened, the fire at the hotel, and this, you said this is where your father passed, in that same location?
No, my dad had passed in it. It was a house fire, his own house, and this was a public investigation that went on.
This was a different location. Okay, because I wasn't sure if you were back at that location where he passed. So you were at that hotel and then using a Ouija board to try and communicate with him. When you began doing this, what was going through your mind? Did you think you were actually going to find some sort of communication with him? What kind of pushed you to attempt this initially with a Ouija board?
Well, I went there because I had an interest. I had no conception of I was going to contact my dad. I was just going because of just a bit, the interest in the paranormal at the time. The Ouija board, it was the people that run it. It was, one of these public events.
Yeah.
So the people that run it, and they brought the board out, and it would end like to go on it. And I'm like, okay, I put my hand on it. So that's how it all started.
So it was just, it was there. Let's give it a shot and see what happens, essentially. So you begin this session. What do you begin asking?
Well, it started off as random questions because we're all taking turns. And it started coming over. If you get any question for anyone in the group of four, and it was coming over to me. And then I was then starting to get an inkling. I wonder if this could be like my dad. So I started asking questions, and then I was getting the answers. But as soon as I started getting the answers, I had the mindset to come off the board, because I didn't want it to be subconsciously moving it, So I come off the board, and another member sat down, four strangers, and I was directing the questions, and it was giving me the answers.
So it's giving you these answers that are very pertinent to your father. Now, was there any question in your mind that you were communicating with your father? Of course, people will argue or say, well, that's something trying to trick you, trying to gain your trust that you're talking with your father. What are your thoughts on those sort of thoughts on an event like this?
Well, at the time, I was convinced it was my father. But after obviously researching the paranormal for 20 odd years now, I do come to the conclusion it may have been my father. It could also have been another spirit there, because obviously my theory is spirits can read your mind, so it could be another spirit that's at that location was obviously reading my mind and saying the answers. So I was communicating something in the afterlife. That's not for any questions. Wasn't my father. I mean, I like to say it as, just because of, it gives me comfort.
Sure.
But, could I say 100% it was my father? No. Was it a spirit? Yeah, it was definitely a spirit, but wasn't my father. I can't say conclusively.
Have you ever attempted to communicate with him again?
I have, and I've succeeded a couple of times using ITC. Again, it could be another spirit just, jumping on, manipulating it. I've had no, evidence, 100%. It would be very difficult, we work in within the paranormal field.
Sure. But let's talk about that for a minute, using ITC. Now, I know electronic voice phenomena is in that category. When you say, is that the exact same thing using ITC, or is it a broader spectrum thing?
ITC is just, it covers them all, like your EVP, your spirit box, like your app, anything, your old recorders as well. It comes all under the one communication.
Yeah. So what were you specifically using the other times that you attempted to communicate with your dad?
Yeah, the first time I was using it, it was a Radio Shack video, that had been broken, so it was looping out. I was getting some really good answers. And the other time I was using this own app that was created. I had an ITC app created. A lot of people say that apps don't work. And to be honest, all I say to these people is just give them a chance. Most apps don't work, but there is a few that do work. One that does work is Echovox. That started me off about, I think it was maybe about 10 years ago. And I primarily work with my own app now. No, I used to do Facebook Lives, you know, and the way I work with doing ITC, because it's primarily ITC that I, my paranormal is ITC.
Yeah.
I always ask intelligent questions. I don't ask yes or no. I'll ask intelligent questions. Like, for instance, I was at a prison a few weeks ago, and it was Peterhead Prison up in the north of Scotland, big high security prison. So I get the ITC out, I started going, could you tell me the name of this prison? Clear as day, it says Peterhead.
It's hard to deny or argue when it's being that clear.
Yeah. And I also said, what is my tablet sitting on? And it was a you know, table tennis, mm-hmm. you know, for the prisoners. And it said tennis, table tennis. So you know, some of these, that's the kind of stuff I get from investigation. It's really intelligent questions. It's the only way to do ITC properly. No yes or no questions, intelligent.
When you begin that and you get kind of some grounding there saying, you're asking intelligent questions, and you get basics like, you know, where am I? What is this mm-hmm. on? Okay, then you've established that you are communicating with someone or something over there. Yeah. Once you've established there's that line of communication going, where do you want to go with your conversation or your questions after that?
What I tend to do is, if I'm in a location, like for instance, a prison, I'll just start off with that. And then I'll try and like dig a little bit deeper, like if I can get any names of like prisoners or things along that type of things. What were they in for? You know, it just depends where you are.
Mm-hmm. Is it more so just trying to learn that individual's history? Do you ever go into an investigation trying to get some sort of question answered?
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes, depending where we are, you know, we'll try and get this, like, question answered. You know, like, for instance, if it's a certain place, like, for instance, if I was doing, like, East Drive, you know, I was asking the question, you know, there's Fred's, you know, the monk, and I asked the question, what did you do to the daughter? And on the ITC, we got pulled up the stairs, pulled by hair, which obviously backs up the evidence of what happened in the house.
Sure. Do you think that something like this, obviously it's used, you know, for paranormal investigations, would this sort of thing ever be usable in police work or trying to find answers to mysteries and crimes that don't have many answers or cold cases?
I think it could be used, because you hear that medium's been used, which is along the similar lines of ITC, that, you know, they're communicating with the spirit. I don't see why it couldn't be used. I haven't done it myself just because I wouldn't like to do any sort of open case. If I to do some of that, like for instance, if the police came to me and asked me for help, mm-hmm. you know, I would lend my hands and it would help. So I've done it with, you know, many people, like the public, and they've came to me and they've asked, can you try and communicate? And we'll put it down and they've left shocked when they've talked to their husbands. And I always say to them, and if you're communicating with spirit, you know, like ask them, what was your nickname or something, like, so that you know that you're actually still communicating with spirit.
When you're having those conversations back and forth, is there a time window on how long they typically last? Are they able, is it kind of a short window where they're connected to this and then they fade off?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Yeah. ITC, like for me anyway, you know, it's peaks and troughs. You get a burst in maybe of like 20 minutes and then it'll die off, and pardon the pun, and then it needs to sort of like, you need to have a break and then it comes back again.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I'm convinced, you know, spirits, like, you know, work off energy. You know, I do believe they feed off our energy, like batteries, for instance, our own energy, because technically we're human batteries. So I think, you know, they get drained and they have to, like, sort of, you know, like, re-energize.
Eventually, they just kind of run out of energy and
yeah.
need some time to come back. Where are they getting the energy from, do you think, with something like this?
The environment's a big part. A lot of spirit energy around about, like limestone
yeah.
and water.
Is there ever anything you can do to increase the energy in the area to extend those conversations, extend the energy that they're able to latch on to, essentially, and use?
What I like to do is, there's a few of us, I like to like rub my hands, because that's releasing energy. I like to do that. I also like to, you know, at the start of an investigation, you know, just crack a couple of jokes, you know, a good bit of vibe up, because I do believe that, you know, the spirits can, you know, feed off of that energy.
Sure. Positive energy, not always negative or something like that. What about objects? Recently, I was interviewing a gentleman who tells me he likes to bring along plasma globes. These are the electronic globes you typically see.
Yeah.
Like basically, they're Tesla coils. They're usually kids' toys where it makes your hairs from static electricity stand on end if you touch the end of it. What about things of that nature that are actively dispelling energy?
Oh, yeah, they work great as well. I used to have a Tesla coil that would bring on investigations. I've used that many times just to charge the air. So, yeah, they work great, yeah.
Interesting that things like that have effects. Tell me more about some of your investigations and using ITC. Tell me about a case that you were called in on. Obviously, we don't need to name names or anything like that, but a private investigation that really had some interesting results for you that stands out in your mind.
Well, one of the cases, I was actually helping a priest, and it was we were there as support staff, and it was a case in Glasgow. And the family were having a lot of paranormal activity. And it resulted in, at one point, the knife came flying through the kitchen to the living room. Now, this was Christmas Eve. Now, the family fled on Christmas Eve. Now, by the time we get called out, it was round about March time. Now, the father came round, opened the door, wouldn't go in the house. So we went into the house, and the presents were still in the living room. Wouldn't get, you know, this took me back, and I'm like, this is 3 months later. So we started off a little walk round. So we ended up going upstairs, and the priest that was doing the blessing, he'd started doing his Latin prayers, and the light started flickering. I'm like, okay, light flicking. Yeah, is that paranormal? No, I would say no to that, but it's interesting. Then we started hearing, like, kind of running up the stairs, you know, and I'm like, we're the only people in this house because we'd locked the doors. So we opened the door, nothing there. Next minute, all you hear is this bang, and we're in this small room. You know, it's a kid's bedroom. It's tiny, and there's drawers there. And next minute, all you hear is this bang, and it's literally about 4 feet from me. And I've turned around and I've looked at the priest, and he's looked at me, and he said, as he was doing that prayers, he was getting to the point where he was like, forcing them out. Now that case is very interesting because we had to go back 3 times. And it ended up, you know, what was there, it was attached to the land, could not remove it.
What was going on that prompted the family to reach out for help? What were some of their experiences that brought this, brought you together with them?
Well, the family, one of the children was, he was really unwell, and he needed a breathing machine at night. Now, it started getting switched off. Now, this was the start of it. It started off like kind of very slight things. By the end of it, it was literally, it was in the husband and the wife's room. The covers were getting pulled off them. You know, all sorts of things, couldn't get to sleep. And it only became the point when the knife got flung through from the kitchen area to the living room. That was the straw that broke the camel's back as such.
Where I think I missed exactly what you said there. What was the straw that broke the camel's back?
It was a knife getting flung through from the kitchen to the living room area.
A knife?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make someone say I'm out.
Yeah.
So, and obviously too, a child that is having difficulty breathing, did that change when they left the house?
I didn't ask them about that. Just that the case said that they never went back to the house. And even after we'd been 3 times, I think they gave the house up because we worked out that it was tied to the land.
Yeah.
Now, the place we were, on the grounds, it was a big mental asylum. And whatever had been on the grounds, it was affecting the house. You could remove it from the house, but we could not remove it from the lands. Because that's something that's very, very difficult to do.
So was this something dark, evil, demonic, or was this the energy of, you know, a real horrible human being that
it was a human being. It was, you know, it was just a nasty human being. And I think it was feeding off of, you know, the childs. Yeah. Who were obviously, you know, like, you know, they were under 10 and they had their health issues. So I think it was, you know, it was affecting them. It was affecting the other houses, like, because it was, you know, with this, how do I, they're all joined up, the houses, was it like cul-de-sac?
Mm-hmm.
So there's houses next door to each of them. They were getting affected a little bit, but not to the extent that the children and the mother and father was.
It's an interesting thing to think about with something that is creating fear in the living, in their homes. Is that a tactic by some spirits to essentially create fearful energy, to create things that they can feed off of, and they view it as, well, this seems to be the best way to get energy. I'm going to scare the hell out of the people here. And the more I do that, the more I have to feed on, versus just kind of living, you know, cohesively with the living.
That's exactly it. It's, you know, I've removed a few spirits myself, and I've helped out on my own. And when I say to people, I was like, if you're scared, they're feeding off that energy. I was like, you know, if I do a removal, I need you to not think about it. I tell them to go shopping, stay at the house for 4 hours, do something that, you know, keep your mind off it. Because if you come back, and if you're then thinking about it, you can draw them back in, even though I've removed them, because it's all the power of thought.
So when you have a case like that, and you cleanse the house, but you can't seem to cleanse the land, is that a hopeless case? Would it take someone with more abilities than yourself to cleanse the land, or is it kind of a hopeless case no matter what? Because is the land the ultimate thing that the living can't truly convince something to leave?
Well, I mean, I can cleanse a little bit, but obviously if it was a case beyond me, like for instance that case in Glasgow, the priest was called out, and this priest in question, I mean, he was trained over in Rome, and he couldn't remove it. So it's a hard question. I mean, I suppose somebody possibly could. It's very, very difficult to remove something from the actual land. I think from, like, news over in America, it'd be something similar, like from, like, your Indian sort of, like, grounds and things like that. You'd find that extremely hard to remove.
I always wonder about that, because, I mean, what are the rules we're playing by here? Can something ever truly be cleansed if the party on the other side doesn't want to leave? I mean, is there any sort of magical words or some sort of, you know, something that could be said within a prayer or a blessing or something that truly does move whatever is there out?
It's a good question. I think if it's, you know, like, just say like a normal kind of like human spirit, you know, I think they're more easily to remove. The more negative they get, and I don't like using the D word, I just say it's a negative spirit. If it's more negative, even like a more negative human spirit, it's more difficult to remove because they've got more power. It all comes down to, like, you know, what they've got sort of attached to. Like, for instance, East Drive. Now, there's someone that's came out and tried to clear East Drive. I've been, like, previously, and it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult.
In your experience, when something is there and you're part of a group that's trying to remove it, what sort of steps do you go through?
Well, the steps we go through is obviously, I mean, it can take a few days. The steps we go through is speaking with the family and finding out exactly, like, you know, where they're at. And if they're terrified, obviously that makes it a lot more difficult because they're going to, like, potentially draw it back in. If it's a human spirit, it's just a case of, like, you know, be getting a priest in, doing your prayers, doing your Latin prayers. There's all sorts of things you can do. Recite, you know, the 60, you know, saints. Latin prayers is one of the best ones to do, in my opinion. There is other, like, forms of removal. It just depends how, like, kind of stubborn it wants to go.
Yeah. Does it matter what, I guess, line of belief that you're going into a haunting with to try and remove it? But if you're going from a Christian background, or if you're going from, you know, insert religion here, does that make a difference in trying to get rid of something? If you're going with a crucifix and calling on God and the saints and all that to help versus just good intent and an intent of just trying to remove it with some other belief system.
That's a good point. Obviously, in the UK, it's all like it's Christian based. But I take it like over in like America, how well would like a priest be going to, you know, somewhere that's on like an Indian, like you know, a Native American like kind of land? I would find that, you know, would that work? I'm not too sure.
Yeah, and who's, if it does matter, does that belief system need to line up with the residents of the home who are living, or does that need to line up with the deceased that you're trying to get rid of? If that person wasn't a Christian, if that person wasn't of whatever belief that the rituals are being performed in, does that need to connect? Is it more powerful if you are speaking essentially the religious language, if there is one, of the deceased that is causing the problems?
I think you know, it's more chance to work if it's with obviously the people that are there that are living, because they're going to believe it more, you know, if you're talking like their religion. And also if the person that's deceased that's haunting the location, if you knew, for instance, that they were like a Christian, you know, getting in there, like, you know, speaking some Latin prayers, it's going to have a lot more effect than if you were doing other things. So that's actually a good point.
Yeah, it's the semantics that I wonder about sometimes of what's most effective and such. When you're getting messages, and I know you've talked about EVPs, I believe, did you speak, obviously the Ouija board, with things like that, is there a difference in danger to the individual that's using these devices? Like, for example, using a Ouija board to communicate versus using a ghost box, for example. Things like Ouija boards seem to have far more of a stigma to them, if you will, than a ghost box. But in the end, are you not doing essentially the same sort of thing? I'm curious as to your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, the Ouija board, it's all, you know, it's TV movie, isn't it? Technically, you're doing the exact same thing. You're calling out, whether you're doing it through a ghost box or whatever you're using. If you're doing a Ouija board, you're doing the exact same thing.
It's so, no different. Yeah, so there's, you would say, if I'm understanding right, that there really isn't a risk differential either way. And what sort of risks do people face when they open up this door or they attempt to use some sort of device to communicate?
Well, what I do is, I don't use the Ouija board, but when I have used it in the past, I've always closed it down. You know, after my session, I'll turn the glass upside down and I'll say, for instance, any spirits here are communicating with me today, I'd like you to go back to where you come from and not follow me home. That's just something as simple as that. The same with, I'm doing an ITC session or, you know, an EVP. I'm saying thanks. I thank the spirits for communicating with me and to stay here. Close this session down. If you can go back to where you come from and not follow anyone that's around here back home. It's really just something as simple as that.
Do they have to listen, though?
They don't have to listen. But the only thing that I can say, now, I'm not sensitive. I don't see spirit. You know, I can only hear spirit through communication. I've heard it with my own eyes 4 times in 20 years. So that kind of tells you how rare it is for me to like hear a spirit. Now, I've not had anything that's followed me back home. But in saying that, I used to have a big collection of haunted items. I have had activity in my house. But when I've put the ITC on, nothing's ever really followed me home. Only once has it happened. But apart from that, nothing's followed me home from an investigation.
What made you decide to start collecting haunted items?
Well, I started I started collecting haunted items like before they were like kind of famous, you know, before everybody's collecting them. It really was just to like do ITC, you know, and to see if I could communicate, you know, with spirit, and it took off from there. And when I was buying my haunted items, some of it was gifted, and some that I bought from other collectors, not off of eBay or anything like that. And it was primarily to actually work with.
To kind of experiment and see if you were able to communicate. But from what you're telling me, you haven't had very much luck, if you will, trying to do anything with those objects.
Oh, no. But, I mean, some of the objects I've got, one of the dolls that I've got, it's an old 1800 mourning doll, Victorian mourning doll, and she's really active. Now, I used to do a lot of Facebook Lives, Tony, you know, with the public and that, and I'd have the doll out. And I think she's been viewed over like a million times, and some of the evidence we've caught from her is, it's really good. She's a really active doll.
If you have a doll like that and it's really active, I guess if it's in the doll, what's keeping it from leaving the doll and doing more?
There's nothing that's, as I've said to people, well, a haunted item, mostly, not all the time, sometimes they can be binded to an item, but mostly they've got free will to come and go. They're attached, they're attracted to the doll, so they come and go as free will. Because this was a mourning doll, this was the lady's child, you know, that was a representation of her daughter. That's just a thing they'd done in the Victorian times. So she was always attached to the doll, and there was actually two spirits attached to the doll. And her name was Elizabeth. We've got her name many times in ITC, but she used to say on, you know, he's coming. And there was a second spirit that she was scared of. We've not got his name. We've tried. We can't get his name, but there's two spirits attached to the doll.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with David. In part two, is there a level of security for a spirit to attach to an object, not just wander free? What kind of energy or spirit would attach itself to a 1700s beheading sword, such as the one that David Barrett owns? Has David ever had or heard of an object that was too haunted to keep in his possession? And what are some of the requests that have been made to David over the years during his investigations? To hear our extra bonus part of the interview, become a supporter, a gravekeeper, as we call them. You can even try it for 3 days free through Apple Podcasts. Get access to all of the episodes, the entire archive, hundreds of interviews, part one and part two of them, as well as advanced episodes of the show released to you before anyone else, and all of it commercial free, as well as the full archive. Check it out for 3 days free on Apple Podcasts right now. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can do the same through patreon.com/realghoststories or go to our website, thegravetalks.com, and find the link right there to become a gravekeeper. Get access to all of that material. Greatly appreciate your support. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.